This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.
I'm Charles Oskey. I'm the superintendent here in Johnson County School District Number 1, and I want to say welcome and thank you for coming here tonight. Just so you know, you're in the right place. We are at the community forum with two candidates interviewing for the BHS principal position. What this is going to consist of tonight is I'm going to ask a question, and each one of the candidates is going to get 5 minutes to answer that question, and we'll go through 7 of those questions. And at the very end, the candidates will, stick around. And if you have individual questions, you can ask them. If you are not a part of the committee, there is a form that we'd like you to fill out before you leave tonight and leave it in a basket as you're exiting. So again, thank you for coming and being present here tonight. So what we will do is we have Mr. Evans and Mr. Cox here tonight as our two candidates that we'll be interviewing. So I'm gonna start out with Mr. Evans, so we'll have him go first. I'll have him introduce himself and tell a little bit about himself, and then Mr. Cox will be next, and then we'll get into a series of questions. So may the journey begin, gentlemen.
All right, thank you, Charles. I'm Jake Evans. I'm the KC principal, been there for 5 years, and in my past life, I was the ag teacher here for 16 years. Proud member of BHS staff. So that's a little bit about my background as a professional in Johnson County. Longtime resident and looking forward to the opportunity tonight.
Thank you. Chris?
Hello. I'm Chris Haas. I currently am a half-time science teacher and half-time assistant principal up here at the high school. My journey in Johnson County and Jake's started nearly about the same time. I started in 03-04 at the old high school and have been here continuously that entire time. Before that, I worked in Colorado for a couple years. And so I'm excited about the opportunity, so thanks for coming out tonight.
All right, thanks. So gentlemen, you're very qualified candidates for this position. I'm excited. They've been through the interview process here today. So with the community forum, Mr. Evans, we will start out with you first. So the first question for the evening for you gentlemen is, please share a time when you helped shape the vision or direction of a program or school, and how did you ensure all students, regardless of backgrounds or goals, felt seen, supported, and motivated to succeed?
Okay, that's a great question. I'll start off with my time here at BHS as the ag teacher. So during my time here at BHS as the ag teacher, we built a culture of inclusiveness, having all students included that were in the ag program, and we encouraged every member to grow along that process. In that process, we had multiple leadership teams. Each team had its unique challenges, and each team ended up growing as they went through. The track record for that program, we had many students go on and be very successful as state officers. Many ended up being successful on CDE teams. But more importantly, a lot of those kids were very successful in their life after high school. They ended up in college. They ended up in trades programs and being very successful. And so that was a little bit of building a program at which we had developed a culture, and that culture was inclusive and involving everybody. So a little more recently, though, in 2020, I had the opportunity of heading to KC and being the principal down there. And just to give you a little taste of KC compared to Buffalo, I get 106 students, K-12. So every kid matters. And so we have to involve every kiddo as best we can. And we do that. So one of the things that we did before I got there, we weren't really a high-performing school. And we rested our laurels on some athletics, and we rested our laurels on being inclusive, which is very important. Those are good things. But we also needed to be high-achieving as well, a school that prides itself in its academics. And so through a process of sharing with the staff the importance of academics and how we can improve upon where we're at. And it was all positive uplifting and building. The staff got on board and realized that, you know what, we're not really being reflective of where we are as a school, where we think we are. And so they dug into the data a little bit, and we led through that process. Now, understand, one of the biggest key factors here is the kiddos, right? So the kids have to feel like they're a part of this process. So I came to the student council, and I said, all right, we really are looking at setting some goals for you on your YTOP scores, on your state testing and stuff like that. And if we set some challenges for you, I think it's only fair that maybe you get to challenge your principal. So the student council, of course, they're like, well, that sounds like a good idea, Mr. Evans. What are you thinking? I said, well, let's see here. If three of your five grades, sixth grade through ninth grade, 10th grade, actually make the mark of where we set the goals for you guys, and you guys can make your individual goals as well, but if you guys make three of those five marks out of your grades, then you'll have your principal here complete whatever the challenge is that you have. And guess what? You know what? We can take it to the student body and have the students involved with it. So get some feedback from your student body as to what challenge you would like to see your principal complete. And then we'll put it to a vote. So we did that. And boy, oh boy, you leave kids with some creativity and wondering what they could have their principal do, you get some interesting tasks. So we narrowed it down. Our very first year, we narrowed it down. And we had three different tasks that I would either complete, and we had the students vote on it. Of course, I didn't have any vote in it. And the winning ticket was that if they met their marks, I would have to sit on top of the roof for the full day and read a book. That wasn't bad, guys. That was pretty good. So they met their marks. I got to sit on the roof. Everybody was engaged. Everybody was involved in that process. Of course, understand we're building culture here. A positive culture, culture focused around being high achieving. After we did that, the kids got a lot more creative. The next principal challenge ended up with pink hair. And let me tell you, when you go to interview a candidate for the latest addition to your staff, and you're interviewing and you have pink hair, it's very hard for them to take you seriously. But we got through that as well. Up to this point, every year we have made growth. This year, sadly enough, we didn't make our mark as where we would like it to be, but that's okay, because every year we have grown, and that's the point. So that's what I have done in my school currently, and that's an example of building that culture and leading them through that process.
All right, thanks, Mr. Evans. Mr. Cox, you are up. Would you like me to repeat the question?
Probably.
Okay. Share a time when you helped shape the vision or direction of a department or in the school, and how did you ensure students, regardless of background or goals, felt seen, supported, and motivated to succeed?
So, on a smaller scale than Jake, when I first came into the school district, the science department was small with very limited options for kids available to them. Actually, we outsourced quite a bit of the science credits you could take to the ag department, actually, under Mr. Miller, who also had a biology degree. So you, in theory, could get through the whole school and only take ag classes and no actual science classes in the space. And so when I came on board and then eventually worked into the teacher leader role, we were able to expand those offerings dramatically. We now offer a series of AP courses, and college-level courses that we did not have when we first started here, as well as we've been able to meet the needs of our lower-income kids by adjusting to a general science course to better meet their needs. And so, on a small scale within my department, we were able to really expand what we offered kids. In other realms, culturally, we had to rebuild the football program after Mr. Lynch left, and so I had an opportunity to rebuild that from the ground up and reset that culture into one of inclusivity and support of all kids in our programs, because we know research says that when kids are involved in things, they're more successful in our school, and a lot of the times we chase those things that make us look good in the paper, right? The titles and state championships and those things. And sometimes we miss out on those low-end kids that are struggling to find a place in our building. And so giving them an anchor in extracurricular activities where they can be seen is really important. And so we tried to do that as best we could with the football program, reset that, start doing more things that brought more kids in and didn't demand that you had to be the most elite athlete to be part of our program. And so I was proud of the little steps we took in that world as well.
All right, thank you. So Chris, you get a good second question, so you get to stay up. All right, please provide an example of how you would support or expand school programs that reflect the local community values and tradition. And what would you ensure BHS, how would you ensure BHS honors and grows those values?
Yeah, so Buffalo's all about hard work, dedication, and commitment to our community and culture, and I love and respect it. I know that we as a school have altered lots of things while I've been here, and one of those is our budgets have shrunk, but not what they used to be. And as a result, the amount of fundraising and the requests we've made to our community have went up. And that's beautiful because we have such a supportive community that wants their kids to be successful. But I'd like to see us work more hand-in-hand and make it a two-way street with our community. What can we do to support the community and not just have the community support us? And so I'd like to see us start to do more things that support our local community, whether it be community service projects, whether it be more involved with the food pantry. We have a diverse group of young people that are dedicated and want to make a difference in the world, and they're involved. Well, we have 85% participation, 87% participation in activities on a regular basis, and we need to use those things to reach out to our community and get involved more. And so I look forward to the opportunity to serve our community in all of those different arenas and not just ask of our community. And so that potential, I think, is a beautiful one because it becomes a real relationship then. And that's what we need in our community, is a solid relationship between the school and the community that works in both directions.
All right, thank you. Mr. Evans, would you like me to repeat the question?
If you don't mind, that'd be great.
Okay, provide an example of how you would support or expand school programs to reflect the local community values and traditions? And how would you ensure BHS honors and grows those values?
Well, I think we've all heard the statement, bison pride lives inside. And that's something that we have had here for a very long time. That's the way the culture of this community is.
Jake, not to interrupt you, is your mic on?
It's on. I have a green light.
Okay.
But we'll stop using the shop teacher voice.
How's that?
Ooh,
there you go.
I can hear myself. All right. So bison pride lives inside. That is something that we have ingrained in this community. Mr. Cox pointed it out very well. The other cool thing about our community is we are great at giving a helping hand, helping those in need. And that was another point that Mr. Cox brought up. But I'd also like to point out that throughout our time in BHS, we want to give the opportunities of having kids have the exposure and experience of a larger school setting as well. And so bringing in those other activities or other events, partnering well with Sheridan College, partnering well with business and industry is something that we need to be focused on as well. We need to have community service. That is something we need to ingrain in our students when they go to leave. We do have a large population of students that are wanting to take an active role in their community. We need to give them the guidance for that. So we need to build partnerships. Those partnerships not are just about community service projects and stuff like that, but also in the process of giving them the opportunity of internships, working within the community, and becoming an active member of the community. That's the piece that we need to look at and try to foster. And so those are programs we need to look at trying to bring in and strengthen in our school and community. While my time here at BHS as the ag teacher, one of the big things that I preached heavily with all my students was to be a person or be a organization that gives a helping hand and not always ask for a handout.
And in that process, it was part of that FFA model, learning to do, doing to learn, earning to live, living to work. Those are things that we put in place in that program. And we made sure that we had strong community service projects. So I look forward to the opportunity to bring back in a lot of community service projects, partnering with the community, in addition, strengthening those relationships that we have to business and industry in our community to give those opportunities for students to learn possibly some career options within our own community or surrounding area. And those partnerships are very crucial for us. So that would be the way I'd look at strengthening what we already have and building upon what we already have.
All right, so Jake, you get a remain. So I want you to take, next question for you as candidates is I want to take your leadership style and I want you to tie it to our strategic plan. And I want to throw in a word, it's a common word, thrive, but I want to throw the word accountability in there. So take your leadership style, tie it to our strategic plan and throw the word accountability in there. And what does that mean if you are the VHS leader and how that ties to your relationship with the community?
I'm a collaborative leader. I am not a top-down type leader. And so when we talk leadership styles, there's several different styles. When we look at being a collaborative leader, we like to hold ourselves accountable east-west, not as much north-south. So when we talk about east-west accountability, that's where we are in the trenches together and we're working through this process together. We are educating our youth together. That is staff, that is community, that is families. So when we talk about collaborative leadership, we work together to raise our youth and educate our youth. That's kind of crucial. And so we hold each other accountable in an east-west fashion. In my staff, what we have put in place to make sure that we have a collaborative approach, our leadership team in our building is rotating, meaning that teachers and staff members, not just the teaching certified, but also staff members, have an opportunity to serve on the leadership team to help navigate our school. That is a rotation process, meaning that you come on to the team, you'll be there for 2 years, and you'll rotate off. That process of having new blood come in develops leadership within the team. And a lot of you have worked with many teams in your own profession, and you all know that when you bring somebody new in on the team, you have to learn their leadership style and you have to learn how to work with them. Okay? So that is part of that process. So I'm constantly growing leaders within my building. I'm building that capacity. The other piece to the accountability side of things, if we're in the trenches together, that means we're trying to accomplish the same goal. And so if we have a focus and a goal set for our school that's very clear, and we are holding each other accountable to it, the accountability becomes a lot easier for us. Okay? So norms are typically what we look at when we talk about meetings and driving the focus for leadership. That is a large portion of how I lead my building. So remember, we go back. It's a collaborative learning or collaborative leading. I got a dry mouth. So that is the approach. I think that answered your question, Mr. Askey.
Yes, it did. Mr. Cox. With that, let's talk a little bit about your leadership style, how it applies to our strategic plan with the word thrive and accountability thrown into that.
Right, so accountability is a big word, right? It's the word that you hear in the news, you're going to hear from the state, accountability. And the truth is, at the end of the day, accountability lies in one of these two humans next year. We have to own that, for better or worse. Right. So the accountability lies with us when things don't go well. Within that, though, singular human beings don't make schools successful. It is about collaboration. And so my leadership style, if you read the books on leadership and education right now, transformational leadership is the term that's thrown around that we all should aim for. But there's transactional leadership, there's servant leadership, there's lots of variations of leadership. I hope that I don't have one style. I hope I give the staff of our school what they need to be successful. And so sometimes that's me taking a back seat and letting other people lead, right? Giving them the opportunity. Sometimes that's with soft conversations, sometimes it's through appointments, sometimes it's through professional development opportunities for them to go and learn things and bring it back to us. Other times, you have to be the head of the spear, right? You have to go out in the public and lead the way that way. Okay? And so I don't think one shoe fits all when it comes to public education and leadership. You have to morph to what is needed. And more importantly, all of us have our strengths and weaknesses when it comes to leadership and all our other skill sets. And so you have to rely on the team around you to support you in the areas you're weak, the things that you can't do well. And the beautiful thing is at Buffalo High School, we have an amazing group of staff that already have lots of natural leadership talents and potentials, a wealth of knowledge and abilities. And so getting the right people in the right place at the right time is a big part of what we have to do. And then let their natural abilities and talents lead us along the way. And my job sometimes is to support that by challenging knowledge, questioning things, redirecting things, being supportive, and sometimes it's standing up and going, okay, let's go this way, guys. And it has to change. It has to change based on all the rules and variables and things that come along in public education. Because it is a mix of amazing amount of stakeholders, it's a complex puzzle, and as a result, you have to be adaptive to it. So hopefully my leadership style meets those needs as this process happens, regardless of what those criteria are. But at the end of the day, when we fall short, it's me. I didn't do something right, and I have to do better. And so that accountability will be me at the end of the day. It's just how it has to be.
All right, thanks. So Mr. Cox, you get the next question. So let's talk about the journey of recruiting and retaining high quality staff. What would that journey look like for you as a leader and the key points of making that successful?
Yeah, an ever-growing challenge in public education across the nation is the number of people going into our field is shrinking. And so being competitive in that market is really important. But more importantly, it's growing quality people. And so I think at the end of the day, there's one characteristic that matters to be a good educator: empathy. If you have empathy, if you know how to sense the emotions and feel where kids are at, we can teach you almost everything else you need to know about being a good educator. We can teach you how to make good lesson plans, we can teach you how to improve your classroom management, but without empathy, it's really hard to connect with kids. And at the end of the day, this game is a relationship game. It's all it ever is. If you trust the person up there helping you out, you'll work that much harder and do that much better in class. And so relationships at the end of the day, built on empathy, is what you have to find. And then we're in a place right now that once we find that those diamonds in the rough, then it's just our job to grow them. We, in some ways, may have to become a secondary, extracurricular, beyond college development program, which we should anyway. I've been teaching for 20 plus years, and I have so much I have to learn and get better at in this job. It's a continuous, nonstop improvement process. The world's changing, and we have to get better every day at what we do. And so, recruiting, challenging. But man, what a beautiful city and a beautiful community that we get to sell to get people here. We find somebody that has empathy and a love for educating kids, and then we grow them. We build systems in place, we offer professional development, we have their back, and we grow them the best people they can be.
Would you like me to repeat the question?
Sure.
Okay, so Mr. Evans, describe your philosophy on how to recruit and retain highly qualified staff or quality staff.
This is a challenge for my building. Small school, rural Wyoming, it's a big challenge. And so I have to take this as a forefront piece that I'm constantly having to look forward as to how can, as teachers age out of the system, how can we replace these teachers? So one of the pieces that we need to look at is institutional knowledge. How is the building ran? And so I have actually taken the approach in my building of looking at my para staff, my classified staff. And through the process of hiring classified staff, I have encouraged them along the way to turn into becoming certified staff. So if we hire well with our classified staff and we start the process of growing them, we look for those opportunities to get them the education needed, to train them up to be the teacher. We move them into the position of a teacher in our building. And that way we get the institutional knowledge, they get trained along the way. I've had several success stories of this and how it's worked for my building, and it's been very productive. And so that is one step, that is one process of how we retain and recruit. I think Mr. Cox pointed on a good point here, talking about a wealth of knowledge, 20 years plus. But I think there's one thing that we're missing as a school district, and I would really like to see us change this. And I think for some of you that are in education that have been in this building or in this district for a long time, you might reflect back to a time where we had our own institute of PD that was kind of required of every teacher that came into the district. And so we need to look at a possibility from the admin side of creating a professional development plan for all teachers that come into our district to go through so that all teachers have that PD, that what we would call big rocks for being successful in our district. And so that is one piece that us that are a little more aged would have the opportunity to give back and help out with the next incoming group of teachers. Again, that's institutional knowledge. We do have a great selling point. It's just 12 miles to the west of us. And so, yes, we get to promote that, and we try to encourage people to move here. We have a great community as well. I hope you guys understand a little bit about the traffic on your website here at the school. Our traffic on the website, there is more traffic on our website from people outside of Johnson County than there are people in Johnson County, which means there are people outside of our community that are looking at possibly relocating and checking out our school system. And so that's already a recruiting piece. That's a recruiting tool that we can use to recruit those professionals.
All right. So, Jake, the next question I have for you, it kind of falls back with student-led community service projects, which both you and Mr. Cox have kind of touched on. I want you to give an example of something you did with student-led community projects, how it was implemented, and what the effects were on Johnson County. So take something that you've done as an example, student-led community projects, and what were the steps to make that happen, and what was the impact with that on the community?
So we'll reflect back to 2018. I had an officer team that was very ambitious. They wanted to do a Meals of Hope campaign, and they wanted to raise 30,000 meals. They wanted to do 30,000 meals of packaged meals to for communities of need. The process in order to take on such a daunting task started out with that team working in the summer. We actually started that work in the summer, planning it out. We had to get involved with the community. We had to get, obviously, funding in order for us to put on this massive project that we did. And so we didn't just look at partnering with Johnson County. We actually partnered with a lot of businesses out of Sheridan County. So we went through and partnered with Sheridan County businesses so that we could raise the funds to do this. And then we also partnered with the rest of the CTSOs in the school, and I think student council at the time too. I think, Mr. Cox, you were here for that. And we accomplished it. The very end of this first semester in February, we packaged 30,000 meals in the auxiliary gym. I never want to see another macaroni and rice meal. That would be something I didn't cook for a while, but we did that. What was the impact? Well, it was eye-opening to our youth. It was eye-opening to our youth about the need. We shared stories of where these meals were going and the impact that they were making in other people's lives. So that was an example of a pretty large-scale community service project that we accomplished in 2018. Recently in my school, we have implemented several smaller-scale events to try to give back to our community and to give back to our youth. One of the things is a rake and run that our FFA chapter down there has done for many years. And so basically it's kids with a bunch of rakes that they run through the community and they literally rake and run. They rake up the elderly's home's leaves in the fall and bag them up so that they don't have to do that. Those are a smaller scale item that has been done and supported in my school. So that's how you bring in that community service aspect. I hope that answered that.
So, Mr. Cox, state the same thing. Can you give the audience some general background or information on a project, student-based project, community project that you led and the impact it had on the community?
So back when Chad Bourgeois was our building principal, I was on the leadership team at that time, and I'm the one that suggested that we, and I worked with Chad to get this started, Holiday Helpers. And so Holiday Helpers, if some of you might recall, we pushed out into the community on the last day before Christmas break, and we kind of broke into groups and teams and went and did lots of stuff, from the senior center to shoveling driveways. It varied greatly. We put on a play for the community and the littles in our town. And so it was a good spurt. And then, you know, it kind of died off a little bit. Parents started pulling their kids out of class, or they were like, well, they don't have to be there, so we'll just excuse them for the day. And so our numbers started to shrink a little bit. It got a little problematic. And I think part of the reason why it did is it was a one-and-done thing. It's hard to do a one-and-done thing and really be a community thing. Like, investments in a community have to be bigger than that. They have to extend further than that. They have to be more consistent than that. So I'd recommend moving forward to make it a smaller scale thing. Have individual, smaller groups of people that spend more time more consistently out in our community. Because I think Holiday Helpers was the right idea, the right notion, the right commitment. But I think a one-day wonder situation isn't quite the same as we want to be integral parts of our community. And so that would be one thing that I helped initiate and one thing I would probably critique is something we could do much better moving forward.
Perfect. Thank you. All right, so we'll go move into the next question. So, Mr. Cox, based on your experience, what are the leadership non-negotiables when you're leading and dealing with conflict or difficult situations, whether it's students, staff, or community, to ensure your actions reflect transparency, integrity, and fairness?
Non-negotiables. Well, civil discourse has to be one of those, right? And so that one gets tricky because we're working with kids and we're working with our kids. And as objective and intellectual as we can be, when our babies are involved, it's hard to be. We get subjective. And so, a non-negotiable for me is we have to start from a place of attempting to understand before we criticize. We have to do a lot of listening. That's a non-negotiable. If you start anywhere else, you're not talking to a person, you're talking at a person. And that is not something that makes progress move forward. And we have to be able to talk long enough that we move past that emotional piece into that frontal lobe piece where we can use our actual critical thinking skills that separate us from animals to come to conclusions and work together. Because the reality is, if there's conflicts, if there's issues, we all want the same thing. We all love the kids in this community and want the best for them. We don't always agree on how to do it, right? But maintaining a level of professional discord, being able to be quiet and calm in the storm, walk and talk our way through it to get to a point where we understand, has to be a non-negotiable. Without it, we're never going to get to a point of consensus or growth as people. So, Those are non-negotiables for me.
Thank you. So, Mr. Evans, again, based on your experience in leadership, what are the non-negotiables in leading through conflict, difficult situations, whether it's students, staff, or community, and how do you ensure your actions reflect transparency, integrity, and fairness?
So, one of the big rocks that we need to look at is that when a parent is coming to you, a lot of times they're frustrated. They want to be heard. They're upset. So the first thing that needs to be done, and the non-negotiable for me, is to listen. So I want to listen. I want to give a lending ear to that. A lot of times, just listening, they will vent, they will let go of their frustration to you. Then you can move them into some civil discourse. Then we can move into a conversation. So we got to get them talking. So please, talk to me. Give me your true feelings. Okay? So we get that out, right? We get that out. We get the mama bear out of us. After we've done that, we can have a conversation. From that conversation point, the one thing, the other pieces that are very important is honesty. I will be completely honest and transparent in that conversation. Honesty also means that I'm going to own. So I will own actions that may have occurred. Okay? So I'm going to own that. So there's some ownership there. So that through the conversation, we've moved ourselves from a point of anger. We've moved ourselves into a point of conversation. Once we move from a point of conversation, we need to move to a point of resolution. What's our actions and steps that we are going to take moving forward? Well, one of the first things I'm going to tell that parent is, you know, thank you for giving me all this information. I'm going to take with it, and I'm going to search out some answers for you. Okay? Because there's always two sides to a story or a situation. Always is. So we go through that process and we find out what the other side of that story is. And then, through that process, we'll have a collective conversation. Okay? We will move beyond that point of anger and frustration. That is how we move through a conflict, and we're having some integrity in that process.
All right, thanks. So here's the next question. Mr. Evans, for you, keeping in mind there's only 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and you're balancing family, your job, and everything that goes along with being in an administrative position, how are you going to demonstrate the visibility and long-term commitment not only to BHS, but to JCSD number one and the community? So, initial question is, how are you going to demonstrate, whether through its visibility or what are you going to do to demonstrate your long-term commitment to BHS, JCSD one, and the community?
Being visible, approachable, being present. And that is what I've done for 21 years in our district. So I've been very approachable. I've been very visible. And I'm also one of those that likes to talk. So I will go sit down at a basketball game next to somebody and start a conversation because I want to know you. That's who I am. That's how I'm wired. So being very visible, being involved in a lot of different activities, being involved in a lot of different areas within our community, beyond just the school, understand that I have to engage Sheridan College in Johnson County. I have to engage our Rotary and our Kiwanis. I need to be present at those type of things and events because that is how, as a school, we are part of the community. I think it's been said before, I've heard it more than once from some of the more gray-haired teachers. I'm not gray, I'm just going bald. But we used to be the hottest show in town. That's the statement that's been said multiple times. Well, I kind of feel like that's where we need to go. We need to be the hottest show in town again. And to do that, we need a leader who is going to be highly involved, engaged in more than just the school, but the community as well. And so that's the approach I take. I feel sorry for my wife because and throughout those years of being an ag teacher and now being in KC as a principal, there's a lot of times where you say 24 hours a day. I'm pretty sure there's 28 if you squeeze in a little extra time. But that's the process that I utilize.
Thank you. Mr. Cox. Again, reiterating, there's only 24 hours in the day, 7 days in a week. Just so everybody's informed, I did request the state we turn it to 48 hours in a day and 14 days in a week. They denied that. So leadership is all about balance. So how are you going to demonstrate your long-term commitment, not only to BHS, JCSD, number one, and the community?
Well, hopefully be me, right? I mean, at the end of the day, I hope I have integrity and I'm honest and I genuinely love this place, right? If not, I wouldn't still be here. And so if I'm me and I believe in those things, then I want to be at the basketball games and the events and the Kiwanis, and I want to be part of the community, right? And so I'd say be me, right? That's one piece of it. The trickiest piece, though, is there's only 24 hours in a day, and we talk about balance. That's a tricky word. Because in some way it implies there's equal amounts of me personal and me professional. And I don't think there is. I don't know if balance makes sense. Maybe not in this position, for sure. It takes more than an 8-hour day. That's just the reality of this job. We're not going to be balanced, personally and professionally. Not if we do it right. We're going to have to give more to this world than we take from it. That's just how it works. And so I can't tell you I'm going to be balanced. I can tell you that I'm going to be dedicated, and I'm going to care about us, and I'm going to go out and be part of the community and continue to care about the people here. But balance won't be part of it.
All right, thank you. All right, Mr. Cox, you get the next question. So in leadership, it is not just about being the principal of BHS. It's being an effective district member of the district leadership team. It's about a commitment to the community, and it's also about a commitment to the great state of Wyoming and the Wyoming Department of Education and all the rules that follow that. So in that journey of you bring up the word balance, I'm going to bring up the word manage. So it's more than just a building. It's about being a part of a team, the JCSD number one team, from a building leader to a district leader to a community leader to a state leader. What does that mean to you as a candidate for this position?
It's exciting. I always like to think about systems. I'm a systems thinking fan. I like to know how the puzzles fit together. And like I said earlier, I can't think of a more complex puzzle than public education. So many stakeholders, internal and external, that have a say and want a say and are deeply invested in how we do business and why we do it the way we do. And so that excites me. And it excites me because I've got a play in the world of administration, but unlike Mr. Evans, who has quite a bit more experience than me, I've been an assistant principal for a couple of years now. And so I've tasted and touched a little bit of the district level leadership, but I'm excited to learn and grow in that world. I've had the opportunity to go to Cheyenne a couple of times during legislative times, things like that. But enough to learn a little bit, but once you learn, then you want to engage more, and you want to see how the system works, and you pull this string, what happens to that string. And so, for me, that's exciting, that I get to delve in and grow as a professional, learn even more complexity within the system, and then hopefully bring some things to the table to improve that. And improve it from the bottom up and the top down, and, as Mr. Evans said, east to west, right? We want to improve all aspects of what we do, and we can't do that unless we see the big picture. And so when I started teaching, I could see my classroom, and then I could see my department as I aged, right? Now I have an opportunity to see what the school does, and I'm only more and more excited all the time. I've been able to serve on lots of district committees for many years, and I have a taste of how the district runs with those committees, but the leadership team is something that will be new for me. Are fairly new for me, and I'm excited in the direction that we can go there and how I can contribute to that and what that looks like. And I'm excited what that looks like moving to the state of Wyoming or even nationally, because everything touches everything in education. And the more you know, the better you can serve. And I'm excited to serve.
So Mr. Evans, just a quick repeat of the question. So this leadership position you're interviewing for today is more than being a building leader. It's about also being a member of the district admin team. It's about a commitment to the community and to the Wyoming Department of Ed. So explain to us how that all ties together with who you are.
Okay, so I've had the privilege of being on the leadership team for our district for the past 5 years and helping through the process of building our strategic plan and hoping to set goals and direction for our district. And so that is something that Mr. Cox pointed out. It is it's a learning trajectory like that. So it's a very steep learning curve. And it's something that I'm passionate about. I'm starting to scratch the surface of exposure beyond our district through working with the Whitney Benefits Foundation, pre-K through 16 initiative that they have, as well as the Governor's Ride initiative. And what I have found that is kind of a common theme through all of this is making those connections along the way. So getting the opportunity to partner up with other school districts in the challenges of the Governor's Ride initiative, looking at things through a different lens because of how their school operates, and bringing back those pieces, those golden nuggets to our district to help grow and improve our district. That is the key to growing as a professional and continuing on this path as a leader for our district. So that's kind of how I viewed my opportunities to grow as a leader in this district. One piece that is very crucial, though, is I'm just one team player. There is 6 other schools, and so we all have to work together to drive our district forward, lead our district forward as a team. And so I am just humbled to be a part of the leadership team for JCSE1. I have, if you look at the leadership team of JCSE1, we have some younger leaders on the team, and we have some very seasoned leaders on the team. And so it's great to have that mix of knowledge. I think just recently in one of our leadership meetings, it was noted that our team is pretty solid when you compare our team as a leadership team compared to other districts. And it's an opportunity that we have because JCSE1 does grow its own leaders.
All right. So we're 1/3 through all the questions, everybody. Super excited. I can see just enthusiasm. So here we are, Jake. We're wrapping up. We got 2 more questions. So here we go. We know leadership is about relationships. We know leadership is about systems. We talk about shared leadership, and I've heard that from both of you here tonight. But the reality is there's a word that comes that I want you both to be able to explain and relate to with your leadership style, and that is trust and then verify. Because in leadership, there is a lot of trust that goes into our teams and what they're doing. But the hardest thing about leadership is then sometimes we have to verify. So what does the words trust and verify mean to you and your philosophy as a leader?
So trust with my staff, I trust them to be the experts in the room. By George, you do not want me teaching ELA. That is probably not my forte. So I want to make sure that my staff are the experts in the room. So I'm going to make sure that I'm giving as much opportunities for professional development in your specific area so that they can be the experts in the room. So I'm going to trust that we are getting the job done. Okay? So that is the trusting portion of that. I'm also going to trust that you know what's best in how to unpack that curriculum. But then the verify piece comes in as to we'll collectively look at where we're at as a school and as a department. And when we collectively look and we say, well, wait a minute here, we're not really making the mark that we had set for ourselves. That's the verify portion. So that's the point in which we grow. It's all about growth. Okay? So we will verify where we're at and we will make an adjustment to hopefully attain our goal. So we verify. So we double check, make sure that we're making our marks as we go. When we set goals, that's kind of the crucial piece to it. The goal setting sets that verify piece. We want to make sure that we have clear expectations
as to what we want to achieve. And notice I've used a lot of we's in that whole process. You have to involve your staff in the process of setting those goals. So the we. And once we have that verified as we will achieve this, then we will make sure that we make it there. So that's trust and verify.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Cox, I'll give you the simple version of the question. With your leadership style, please explain to us the trust and verify.
So I used to coach. And when I first started coaching, I did a lot of yelling from the sideline. Rearranging kids out on the field and telling them what to do all the time. And as I got better at coaching in practice, I found that the yelling during the game, I didn't need to do as much. Because if you're doing a good job of coaching, you get to hand over the responsibility to the kids. Because at the end of the day, they're the ones out there performing. And good coaches don't have to yell from the sideline all the time. They trust the kids, the players, on the field. They've given them the tools they need, or the kids have the tools they need, and they allow them to go do what they do and do it well. And so, for me, trust is handing over that power and control. Not micromanaging everyone all the time. Knowing that this building is full of really capable human beings that I can give power and control to go and improve kids' lives. That's trust to me. Now, verify. We always got to be watching. First of all, our job isn't just to manage or grow kids. We're here to grow people. And if the staff isn't getting better all the time, then I'm not doing my job. And so, I have to do two things, right? I have to trust them to do their job. Hopefully, that's based on the fact that I've watched them do it. I know they can do it. I've seen them do it. I'm aware of their skill sets and abilities. And I don't overextend them. And I support them when they need it. And that's how I hand over that trust. But it also means I can't sit in my office and worry about all the emails in the middle of the day. I have to be out watching them do what they do wonderfully well. Stealing and taking those pieces and handing it to other staff members that are struggling with those skill sets, right? And so when I'm out verifying that they're great at what they do, and I'm watching that, and I'm seeing it in action, and I'm double-checking to make sure it's not sliding, I'm also growing them to be better versions of themselves, or giving them opportunities to collaborate and grow, right? So for me, trust is handing over power and control to people that I know can do it, and then it's following that up with making sure that the machine is oiled all the time, and when it gets squeaky, we check on it, and we take care of it, and we just keep making it better. We keep adding horsepower, and we keep growing this machine into a beast. Trusting and verifying.
All right. So, Mr. Cox, we'll finish with the last question. So, part of the 4 years I've been here, it's about developing our purpose. As part of what we do with our evaluations, we all have a purpose statement. So I would like you to take your purpose and tie it into why you are the best candidate for this position.
So if you read it, the plaques outside my classroom, and it speaks to empowering greatness, right, in others. There's the potential for greatness in all of us. In lots of different variations, and my job as an educator is to help people along their way. Sometimes it's to step out of the way and let them do what they do. Sometimes it's to give them support. Sometimes it's to drag them along. That looks different in different ways. Earlier today we talked about imposter syndrome, right? Sometimes in my life that's gotten my way a little bit, right? Doubting and questioning myself. But lost my train of thought. That's bad. Sorry. Can you repeat the question?
So, taking your purpose and tying it into why you are the best candidate for this position.
brain shutting down. And I am so sorry, guys. I only had a couple hours of sleep in the last 36 hours, so give me a second. So, with that said, the best person for the job. Imposter syndrome gets in the way all the time. And so when this job first came open, I kind of questioned whether I was the right fit or I should even do it. And so I processed for a long time, should this be me? And I asked myself lots of questions. And I came to a point where I feel it is. And it is because, first of all, I have a love and passion for this place and the people in it and all the students we've had along the way. And I want to love and support. And I'm fortunate enough to be one of those people that naturally questions everything. And I think that's good for leading a staff, is you're just asking questions and probing and pushing people to be better versions of themselves. That's my goal, my want, my desire. So hopefully that makes me fit into that as best I possibly can. And when it comes to greatness, that's all I want, is if we improve every single day, just get better at what we do as a staff and as students, greatness is in the distance there. And this isn't a sprint. It doesn't have to be greatness tomorrow. But if we just set ourselves up and our kids up to know that failure is part of growth, and we try, sometimes we stumble and fall, and we just get up and try again the next day. And we just constantly reinforce that moving forward is what it takes. That's all it takes. Every day, you're going to climb the mountain. That mountain is greatness for lots of different people. And it fits perfectly with the district vision of allowing all kids to thrive. To me, those are synonymous statements. And so I wrote that belief up 22 years ago on the board. And the strategic plan that we came up with in the last couple of years matches it. So I feel like that's a good match between me and the district and the job.
All right, Mr. Evans. Again, take your purpose statement, and tie it to why you are the best candidate for this position.
So my purpose statement is to be a compassionate, inspiring leader that leads with integrity for my community, my school, and my family. That is my purpose statement. I drafted that 5 years ago when I became a principal because I realized that as a leader of a building, I'm more than just a leader of a school building. I'm a leader in the community. And I know that that is a piece that has to be in place as the leader of this building. So that is my purpose statement. If you'll notice, there's three key words in it: compassionate, inspiring, and integrity. Those are my three key words that I like to lead everything with. So those are what I live my life by. I try to inspire others to be better, to be greater than they are, because I like to watch others be very successful. That's the way I have led for 21 years in education. Watching others be successful is my greatest reward. And so my passion and expectation is to do that same thing on a greater scale here at VHS. Now, one of the benefits that we have here, and I think Mr. Cox kind of pointed it out, that you have two people up here on this stage that are vying for the principal position. You have two people that have 21 and 22 years invested in this community. I believe you have somebody that's invested to be here for the long haul. And either one of us would be very proud to be your leader at VHS. And I just hope that it is me.
All right, with that, thanks, gentlemen. I would agree, we've got some quality candidates. What I'm going to ask the candidates to do is to stick around, answer a few questions individually here this evening. I will put a time limit on that we're not going to hang out till midnight. So in about 30 to 40 minutes, we're still having conversations. I'll probably try to exit to everybody, but if the candidates would please come down. Jake, if you want to hang out over there. Mr. Cox, you can hang out in front of this table if there's any questions from the community. I will ask, if you are not a part of the committee, there are those sheets that I'd like you to fill out, and please turn in before you leave this evening. So thanks, everybody, for attending. And we'll just kind of open it to some questions, and we'll go from there with there. So, again, thanks for coming.
This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.